Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad for your time and attention. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations on the exchange, feel free. Phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. And by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There are many stories of people who need a crutch of some sort to get through life. In the life of today's guest, the crutches were booze and drugs and a few other things he'll tell us about as well. Dean Scholl of Montague says he spent much of his life digging holes in my soul. And that is the name of the memoir he wrote about getting way down into the holes and finally getting out of them. Dean Scholl, if you like what you hear today, will be at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland tonight at 7. But he's our guest in the studio here now. Dean, welcome.
Hello.
So tell us a bit about you and the experiences that led to the book. I mean, at some point in your life, did you hit this moment and say, bing, I need to write a book?
The book started in 2001 when I was in India on a travel. Exactly how it emerged, take me a little bit to recall here, but it was an epiphany of some sort. And then the title changed actually about 3 years ago when I realized that the following book's going to be called Filling the Holes in My Soul.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and that even changed to With Love because I tried filling them with everything else but love. And none of it works, being that it's only temporary. Okay, love, the power, love of God, the divine, will sustain all on the foundation when it's built honestly and integrously. In honor of the divine and the higher source. So the whole digging holes in my soul was a reflection when I looked back that that's what was actually happening. And when you do read the book, you understand that it's a paradoxical phrase because, as I explain in the book, the digging, as it apparently is perceived as hell and chaos, within it are jewels of grace and awakening if one gets to a place to where they can interpret them as such.
So it's not just digging, it's mining, in a sense.
Pretty much. Uncovering, mining, those words are right, yes. Yes.
A lot of people obviously recover from addictions and or substance abuse and do not write books. So, I mean, was this just a story you felt you had to tell?
Well, great question, because the gist here is most people who are recovering, it's like they switch. For me, my experience has been by going to AA and other rooms, they switch addictions to another source, be it a more constructive source than deconstructive source. Okay, I don't find complete liberation in that. Okay, I will firmly say that I stand in liberation. I don't need meetings or an outside source to stand in power. I stand in the power of the self in union with the divine, with God, it's my father. Okay, I don't get into religion too much, the breakdown of it all or an interpretation of it all. God is my father. The Christos energy consciousness is my brother. And Mother Mary is the family I walk with.
How long were you a substance abuser?
Oh, wow. Probably since the first time I drank at 16.
Mm-hmm.
It was just excess. Actually, in the book, I refer to it as my first overdose because it wiped me out. I was asleep for a few days.
Really?
You know, it was an upset over a young lady. That's pretty much how it all began. And at that point, anytime it hurt emotionally, usually due to interaction with females, it was Medicaid and booze. You know, in my late teens and early 20s, I experimented with pretty much everything else. I don't think I missed anything. But most of that made me sick or depressed, and I wasn't into being depressed or being sick, puking, or those sort of things. Booze gave me energy and that false power to be, yeah, mm-hmm. Let's go kick, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for holding back on the word.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you were never much of a social drinker. It was always like once you got the first drink, there were going to be 6 or 12 more.
Oh, exactly. I drank. I never learned how to moderate. It wasn't a question about moderating. It's just like a beer meant 20. That's just what it was. You know, at that age, no responsibilities. You just run around doing what you do, you know?
You mentioned in the book stopping on, and you're very specific about the date. It was Halloween 2006.
Right.
What was the series of events going on there?
Okay, the series of events. I waited till I was 42 to get married. By 45, I was divorced. So I moved out of the Bay Area up to San Francisco. I write about this beautifully in the book, I must say, that a perfect place, the ocean, you think it can be so fulfilling in many ways, but it's also a perfect place to bring one to their knees. And within a year of drinking alone out there, I mean, I maintained my job working, but at night I'd walk in the door and click, and was the first of 15 beers. And then by the time I stopped on my birthday, October 21st, I was up to a 12-pack and sometimes two bottles of beer a night, smoking cigarillos and popping a sleeping pill to go to bed. But I designed the whole thing knowing physically it would be painful. So I was listening to Tony Robbins at the time, knowing something had to change, and I would reflect on Europe and all the passion I once had for living life.
Tony Robbins, the motivational speaker.
Right. Uh-huh. And all the passion, it's like I'd look back and cry and slam stuff against the wall and just, where's all the effing passion gone, you know? And it was there. I was just too loaded to participate with it and all the gifts and everything else. And I just knew it was time. You know, there was, and the beauty about it was, and this is really the genesis for all long-lasting transformation, it has to be of your own choice. It can't be the wife. It can't be the judge. It can't be anything outside yourself that says, this is for me. It's my time. And God, it brings me to tears talking about it because it's...
But what you're saying is nobody can recover for you.
That's it. And it really has to be your choice. And you have to embrace that choice and be willing to go the distance with that choice, the same distance you went when you were living the opposite side of that choice, which was destroying your life.
We will talk more about the recovery of Dean Scholl, as described in his book, Digging Holes in My Soul. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange with Dean and take phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us here on the Exchange. Back here on the program in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Dean Scholl. He's one of us. He lives in Montague, California, and has written a memoir about his years drinking and drugging and making rock and roll. His book is called Digging Holes in My Soul. And you can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Dean's progression, and maybe you have a story you'd like to share as well. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. When you first get into reading Digging Holes in My Soul, as the reader, you're confronted with some terms that are brand new, like the ego I mind is one you throw around a lot. What does that mean, ego I mind?
Well, for me, it's basically the unawakened consciousness dominated by the ego, okay, and our mind. I refer to the mind as basically like the hard drive in the computer. It is a vacant box till it begins to be filled. Okay, and for humanity, it's filled with the programming of our parents, our government, our religion, what they've experienced. And most of us live our lives in other people's experiences. Yes, we go accumulate some of our own, but it's wearing their garments almost, you know. And until we actually walk away from that, and it's a deeper walking than just dropping the coat. It takes some time to understand and even accept, and most people don't want to accept that as a truth. It's my truth. It's what I've awakened to.
But when you write about ego, I mind, it sounds like it's an annoying sort of presence, like it's the ego part of you rising up and saying this is what I want versus things that are good for you or the universe.
Typically, the ego is an organization of activity that arrives from prejudices, from judgments, from you know, even bless all religions, but you know, I've been through so many, and one you know, slanders the other and this and that, and it's our way, the only way, and then you get locked into that. So it's not so much that it's as much of an alienation as, you know, as it is a destructive source, okay? And but it can also be, see, everything's in dualistic terms and in for most mankind, you know, black, white, hot, cold. So the ego is, it can be everything. That's what makes it so deceiving and so beautiful, actually, okay? Because it's not your enemy. It can also be your gift, like it is now. I need it to survive, to make choices, but I also need to run it instead of allowing it to run me. That's the key difference.
Grab your headphones. We have a call for you. Marilee and Applegate, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dean Scholl. He's the author of Digging Holes in My Soul.
Hi, Dean.
Hello.
And I just wanted to say that it takes a lot of courage to do what you're doing or what you've been doing, and writing the book about it it's like putting the final touches on your soul work. I think in a way I have really at times wanted to do the same thing, and sometimes the life I've led has led me to the point where it could drive me mad sometimes to write the book. But anyhow, I had a terrible experience for me about, within the last month or two, because I've moved away from an area that I didn't want to live anymore. And I'm very much isolated. And that has its good parts to it and its not so good parts to it. People that used to be my friends say, well, you live too far away from me now. And so the joy that I feel in processing in a very beautiful, lovely place and taking consideration to my soul needs, and it's about the peeling of the onions for me too, because I've done this work for years and it's gotten me more and more isolated, and it's also made me feel a lot of grief because I've lost a lot of people, and a lot of family stuff is no longer I can't really go in there and bargain with anybody. And it seems like what's happening right now is that I'm just saying goodbye all the time. And I just wanted to say the loneliness aspect, when, you know, when I've had times when I get in my car and just drive somewhere to get away from myself. I might drive to Canada or, you know, do something really wild to somebody else, but to me it's doing my soul work. I can't even do that anymore because I'm older. And mm-hmm. I just wanted to find a little bit from what you have said.
All right. Marilee, thanks for the call. Very much appreciate hearing from you. Soul work, she calls it. Is that sort of bear some resemblance to what you went through?
Yeah. May I respond to her question some? Marilee,
mm-hmm.
What I picked up on right away is, and I have to be real and honest, your focus is, I'm saying goodbye, I'm lonely, I'm losing things. It's all what's seemingly the negative energy sides of what you're experiencing, that'll keep you actually sunk, you know, in a lower vibration. So it's not so much that you're leaving, I'm going to experience something new. By just switching.
Not what you're leaving behind, but what you're heading towards.
Right, what you're heading towards, exactly. Well said there. It's that sort of, that'll make a transition inside of you. I'm not alone and experiencing loneliness. There's no such thing. It's a focal point. Again, it's the ego wants to sabotage you, actually, from connecting with your soul. That's the destructive side of the ego, I mind. Believe you me, edge out God, okay? Edging God out, excuse me, ego. As I write in the book, I can't give you the ending, but it's really, I encourage you to read it because it walks through a lot of this, what you're experiencing, actually everything you talked about, and it helps you relax in the transition, what seemingly is chaos right now or loneliness. These are all actually gifts, depending on your ability to interpret them from the upside instead of from the downside, and then participate them from the child's point of view of, this is all new and scary and yeah, instead of, oh well, I'll just back into a corner and hide from all this.
So this is interesting. You turn ego into an acronym, edging God out.
Actually, it's something I picked up many years ago. Mm-hmm. Right, I forget where exactly, but right, ego, edge God out.
So you really picked up a lot of bits and pieces here and there that kind of form your personal philosophy now.
In 7 years. See, here's the thing. I spend 6 hours, 8 hours a night drinking. When I said enough's enough, I turn that 6, 8 hours into investing in me. Instead of, like I wrote, living with emotional mismanaged, addictive, compulsive, destructive, disempowering, emotional behavioral tendencies. Well, when you turn that around to the energetic size of it all, bam, I'm swimming in the ocean till midnight, you know, and vibrating and just... And then I've spent hours, thousands of hours with audio CDs studying the likes of Dr. Hawkins, Carolyn Mice, Tony Robbins, went through all his collection, an amazing motivator. And then Wayne Dyer, you launch into what falls off the shelf into your lap. It's all, as I call in the book, divinely designed, okay, to assist you. And right along the divine, the universe assisting you will be the ego, our mind, sabotaging you. It doesn't want to lose you as basically a member of the herd of society. It doesn't want you to think for yourself. It wants to keep you programmed. It really does. And to become that awakened human being is where you can look back and say, wow, I was living an unauthentic life. To return to authenticity, the gift of what you truly are, and to actually figure out who that person really is the journey. And it will be heaven and hell, but that's the beauty of it.
Dean Scholl is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Digging Holes in My Soul. It's his story about getting into addiction and abuse and recovery eventually. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your thoughts, comments, questions, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Something Marilee asked about, though, made me think of another question, which is, was the process of writing the book cathartic? Did you feel like you got stuff out, or was it painful, like you were reliving this stuff?
It was all that and so much more. Extremely therapeutic. And liberating, okay, freeing. You know, I really... with full awakened consciousness, not drugged up, not asleep, was present. And the gift, really the gift was connecting with my sweetie's good friend, Shanti, the editor, who came to me at one point and basically said, because I was struggling with my ego, is my ego want to put this book, or is it the God path I'm walking, which is it? And I was sitting for months, and Shanti became my editor, and she came a special visit one day to meet me and said, the world needs this book, people need this book, they need your story. And it was from her encouragement I decided to go through financially and finish the book on my own with her, and have it designed and printed only 200 copies for now.
Let's talk about your early life. It sounds like it was a bit nomadic with a single mom.
Yeah, to say the least. And interestingly enough, that's why moving to Europe and traveling for 11 years as a singer was just so comfortable for me. Bless my mom, you know, in the 60s and 70s, a single mother out there trying to work and support three children. I'm sure she had her hands full. And I talk a little bit rough of my mom in the book, which is just my experience as a child in that. You know, when a child isn't perceivingly getting the love and nurturing they get, we crumble. Self-esteem is a hard thing. You just can't pull it off a shelf. That is built by good guidance and good education. And it's through good, empowering parenting, okay, that one, you know, evolves with this. And you can see it all over the country. Millions and millions of people aren't getting that, you know, as children. And the drug abuse and even now the pill popping, pharmaceutical, over-the-counter, certified legal prescription drugs is taking out more and more people. And my guess is their self-esteem is low to give their power to that drug instead of to themselves and recovering or just being without it.
So you had some issues with the family, certainly. Your mom stopped being a single mom, and there was a blended family when your mom married a Pan Am pilot. And it was interesting because as soon as you talked about the merging of this family, I was thinking Brady Bunch. And then the next sentence you said, we were like the Brady Bunch. But you really weren't, were you?
The kids were. It was... on many levels we were. It's fun. It's so long ago. I don't recall their show too well, but... we enjoyed being with each other. It was strange having seven kids all within 5 years of age and all that stuff, and trying to explain that to other people in our school. But it was an interesting time. I can't say I would wish it on anybody, but what can you do? We've all had our past experiences like this.
All right, so you blended this family, you moved around, and but despite all the things in your life, it sounds like you and your siblings were good students.
Amazing, yeah. We had disciplined, you know, extreme discipline to this day. I fold every piece of clothing, and once I decided to participate with my mind and brain again, I'm a great reader, and it's all about conditioning, you know, which dog we choose to feed, you know? The empowering ones or the disempowering ones.
So you were just talking about your mom and some of the issues you have with her, and she sounds fairly dismissive of kids.
My mom, I'm sure, was overwhelmed at the time with raising us and working. And I know her today, and I know she just wished for the best of us. And sometimes the best for another means taking yourself to a place that you wish you didn't have to go, especially time-wise. So therefore, you don't have the time for the things you want to nurture. But your love is there to nurture. And then if you don't know how to express that love, like a lot of us, it just ends up somewhat dysfunctional for many of the people involved.
So tell us about you and music. And when did you first start getting into bands? Because this ended up being a central theme in your life.
Central theme, yes, which was accidental, because I spent my whole life as a child playing every sport I could. I was just gifted, even though I'm small in height, balancing, gymnastics, running, speed, tennis, volleyball. There wasn't a sport I didn't play, diving off the high dives. But the singing voice that came out of me at 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, just in the back seat of the car driving around with mom, you know, Michael Jackson songs, it's just ABC, it just came out like a bird. It was there, but nothing I ever paid attention to. I wanted to be a football quarterback like John Unitas and Joe Namath from those years, you know.
It was when you stopped at about 5'10", that was kind of off the cliff.
5'7", yeah.
Really?
yeah. So it's I had to surrender that, and it was basically the good friends, my brother in particular, the drummer, and the other friends who were musicians who my long red curly hair, I fit the stereotyped singer image of that time of Robert Plant, Roger Daltrey, and a few others. Mm-hmm. And it just became me. I didn't become it. It just seduced me. And next thing I knew, I went from the shy, stoned-out little boy to the top women of the high school fighting over me. And I had no idea how to manage that, but it felt right, you know?
Well, you mentioned high school, and I must say that as you read through the book, it's not entirely clear did you graduate from high school?
Yeah, I did. With pretty good grades, actually, yeah.
And did you plan on college? Was that ever a thought? I mean, did you think in terms of a career when you were at that point in your life? It sounds like you had been getting loaded for at least a year or two by the time you got out of high school.
Yeah, well, actually, no, never thought about college. It was just like done with the system, you know. And actually, my best friend, who I write about in the book, didn't graduate, but had a great mind from his father, who has many patents with HP and all this, and they had some money, and we just started building houses. And we've just been basically running our own show ever since. And that's a gift and a curse, as you know as well, because if you're not managing yourself, having that free time and ability to show up when you want or not show up can cripple you. Yeah.
So I'm trying to put the things in time order here. I guess this is the way my mind organizes itself. But so we talked about music, we talked about careers, but relationships. This is a big, big part of the book. You and women, you mentioned already, a very long train here. Tell us about Terry, the first Terry.
Oh, wow. As I write about in the book, I believe people enter our lives specifically for a purpose. That purpose is different for each of us. Okay, that purpose from Terry for me was to do everything she could to sort of fill in the gaps that my mom wasn't able to fill. By one, telling me, you're beautiful. You have so much potential, so many talents, so many gifts. Why is it you are so destructive to yourself, so hard on yourself? Why do you think you can't achieve anything? Why is it you're always saying F it and giving up? And when you just, I see nothing but so much grace in you. And that was her job. And as I describe in the book, perfectly done. Okay, I didn't receive it, but that's the gift. That's the paradox in the God orchestration of things. It wasn't for Terry to see me through on that. I needed to do that on my own. You know, you can bring the horse to water and have the water there for them all day long, but they need to drink. So by going to Europe put me out on my own. And by taking on a career as a singer, I had to show up. Okay, or I didn't get hired back. But, you know, I was called to show up for something I loved that was in my heart. So I showed up in fine, excellent form and managed to sustain a singing career over there for over a decade and was welcomed back to every resort I sang in again and again and again.
So it's quite a career and quite a story. Digging Holes in My Soul is the book. Dean Scholl of Montague is our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. And we will come back and talk more with him and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. We have a few other stories of sex and drugs and rock and roll, I'm certain, out amongst the hills and valleys of our region. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we return with Dean Scholl, back here in a minute 30. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Dean Scholl. He lives in Montague right here in our region and is the author of a book out in limited release. It's called Digging Holes in My Soul. It's about the process that Dean went through for many years, getting himself into a lot of trouble, basically, with booze and drugs. He lived the full sex and drugs and rock and roll lifestyle and writes about it. Lived to tell about it is the good thing. The story is told in Digging Holes in My Soul, and he'll appear this evening at 7 o'clock at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland to talk about the book, and he's here on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about it now. You can join us if you'd like, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. We were just talking about a very important woman in your life, Terry. And I should point out that your current significant other is also named Terry, but not the same Terry. But the first Terry, this is why I refer to her as the first Terry, you were saying that she gave you so much that you really couldn't make use of, it sounds like, weren't ready to accept those things about yourself. Terry's mom, though, gave you a book, you mentioned, As a Man Thinketh. And was this the beginning of what led through Tony Robbins and all the other people and philosophers you mentioned?
I would have to say so, yeah. And at the time, I didn't know that. Again, which is, it's so expansive, you know, that how it all begins or where it begins or how it begins. I never would have guessed that that book was, you know, the germinating seed that would sprout so much passion to evolve at some point in some time.
But at first, was it like, oh, yeah, great, this book from Terry's mom, whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. It was actually too profound for my lazy mind at the time. You know, it took work to read it, and it wasn't work I wanted to participate with at the time, you know, because it meant surrendering and changing my life, and I wasn't ready. You can argue with that and go in and out of rooms or whatever, therapists. When you're not ready, you're just not ready. And it's almost better off to just embrace that and then know when you are ready and then surrender that time completely and full-heartedly and joyfully.
But there were times when you did think you were ready, correct? I mean, you talk about going to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting with Tanya.
Tanya, again, this is why I clarify. That was at the request of others.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that point is, I can't speak about it enough. It will not last, I promise you. I can promise you, and I don't make a lot of promises anymore, but unless it's of your own soul, your own choice, basically, and that's sort of the reason why you lose everything before that moment, because it has to be done on your own. You know, the way I've lived it and experienced it, and from the others I've talked to who have success around it and with it, It's a choice we must do, come face to face with and honor, and joyfully make, not regrettably make either, a very key energetic difference. Okay, regret will keep you stuck in this is a fight. It can't be a fight. It has to be a joy, and let's take this on. We get to do this now. I get to say goodbye to that old drunken way of life. It brought me so much fun, so many gifts. I don't hate my past at all. I'm very grateful for how it evolved me. It brought me to that liberating moment. And to curse it or put it on a shelf and not want to honor it or speak to it. And there was abuse verbally, physically, to the women, to myself, to friends that, you know, most people don't want to read about or talk about. But unless I full-heartedly embrace that, I can't forgive it or understand its gifts in it. Okay? And that's the way I interpret this. And all I can say is it's working for me. That's all I can say.
You know, your answer to this may be duh, but even if you don't regret things, do you still sometimes wish you'd handled things a little differently, or is that also a regret?
The wishing would be from the ego and mind side of me that, you know, because you know you've freaked other people out, hurt them on some level. But the twist is that you hope at some point in life they look back, because everybody plays a role in everything. Everyone has free choice, a big theme through the book. Okay, a big thread through the book, free will, free choice. You know, my wife, a lot of abuse, she was never chained to me. Yet somehow she chose to be around and not leave. So she has her own soul calling and mission and footwork in that relationship with me. And after 5 years, it was time for that to move on. What she's done from that time with me, I don't know. Okay, and I don't need to know.
But she made a big difference in your life, even if it was not ultimately a successful relationship.
Big difference in that, yeah. Our energies beat the hell out of both of us. And see, that's why I'm saying it looked so ugly. But when I finally got to the point after her of drinking alone, is when I was able to awaken and say, oh my gosh, I don't want to be that man ever again. Okay, but you say it with conviction, and then you go out there and you earn it. You earn not being that man again. It's no simple task. Okay, for a year straight, every morning with my personal Tony Robbins coach, it cost a fortune, money I'd never think of spending on anything. My soul didn't let me fight it. It just came naturally. Okay, and then to get up and run that whole year, every morning, devoted, rain, shine, it's not laziest. This is not for the lazy. You want it, you earn it, just like your master's or your bachelor's or your 25 years of marriage. You participate with it fully, if they're joyfully. Okay, and it's not easy, but the end of the day, I don't have to say I'm sorry to people anymore. You know, oh my gosh, what have I done now? You know, I remember stuff. I make mistakes, but I stand up and I own them immediately instead of running from them and leaving a trail of chaos behind me.
When you talk about your spiritual growth, and you mentioned Tony Robbins and the book from Terry's mom, As a Man Thinketh, and just so many other things. Had you had a religious or spiritual tradition as a child?
Yeah, Catholicism. Mm-hmm. Raised a Catholic till I was confirmed at 13 or 14.
So the whole ball of wine. You went through the whole Catholic
altar
process.
Boy, mm-hmm. All that stuff. And I just remember it was in Los Altos, California. What a facade. For me, the whole thing is... They're two different people. What shows up on Sunday and then what leaves there and participates with life most of the week. Most of the people, from what I've experienced. And bless it and honor it, and just like AA and all that, bless everything. It's there. It's all just tools. How you use the tool is what matters. Okay? Constructively or manipulatively or inauthentically. And only you know how you're using that tool, whatever tool it is.
We talked about going to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting with Tanya. So there were several attempts that didn't take.
Exactly.
To quit the stuff. How many times did you stop and then start again?
Probably half a dozen. Mm-hmm. Nothing too much, because I wasn't. I was ordered to go there or trying to save a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was nothing my heart was embracing.
So you felt a sense of obligation one way or the other. Okay.
True.
So, and I thought I heard some criticism of 12-step programs earlier. I mean, do you have a problem with the general nature of, like, what goes on at Narcotics Anonymous or Alcoholics Anonymous? I mean, is it...
let's just,
because their literature, I should say, is very much about you can't do this because somebody sent you here. You have to do it because you're there of your own volition.
Let's just say I believe AA and all of them are in need of a paradigm shift. Okay, they've been pushing their message, same message for a long time. In my experience, again, people become addicted to those rooms. I don't experience true liberation from the people in those rooms. They can't go to bars. I can go to a bar tomorrow. I can go sing again if I want in clubs 6 nights a week. It's not the booze. Okay, it was my emotional psychic state. And I believe those rooms create a dependency for people that doesn't sit them in the pure power of the self and a connection with God, in the divine, you know? And that's my challenge with AA and NA, is to how can I demonstrate and express constructively, of course, and humbly, very important, that they might want to expand and try a few new things on, you know, to really assist people with liberation and free them from addiction, even to their meetings.
All right, so if you're saying that AA and NA replace booze or drugs with meetings, I mean, have you filled the hole in your soul where the booze was once filling with God, with spiritualism?
Primarily, yeah, which is why my talk tonight is about addiction. We are all addicts in some place. Again, the addiction, was it empowering or disempowering? That's the key difference. What does it do for you? Okay, is it leaving you joyfully wanting to go to sleep and wake up the next day, or regretfully going to sleep and regretfully having to wake up the next day?
So good addictions, okay? And bad addictions.
You know, we have to work. We have to do things, and to do them with passion and love is the difference. You know, I'm building a little house for me and my sweetheart now. It's more work than I should be doing at 52 years old, physically kicking my arse, okay? But it's passionate. It's a soul calling. And as I'm working on the house, I'm continuing. It reminds me to continue to work on me. It's an ongoing process, okay? And I will not get lazy around it.
You talked about running, about getting physical again. I mean, had you kind of let yourself go when you were doing the rock star thing in Europe?
No, I don't know. It was my birth sign being the Libra, the scales, but it came to me automatically. If I'm going to destroy myself every night, and because I had the freedom every day, I only worked 4 hours a night singing, I would rebuild myself so I could go get destroyed again the next night. It just came to me naturally. It was a natural flow.
I have to believe that as heavily as you were drinking, there must have been a fair amount of blackout episodes where you just would wake up the next morning and not really be sure what happened the night before.
Too many. Sure. Too many. And, again, to regret them, not regret them. If you can't remember them, what's there to regret?
So do you have, I mean, you mentioned a coach. I mean, is there somebody who helps you with this process? Because as much as you came from a very straight old line religion, from Catholicism, it sounds like you reject a lot of organized religion now. So is there a coach, a guide, a minister, a pastor, somebody who helps you with what you do now? Or is it all coming from you?
I leave it up to anybody, everybody, to find what works for them. See, the coach for me, basically, we ripped out what I call my hard drive, because all it was doing was telling me I'm no good. I've effed up my life. I have no potential. It had to go. And so at 46, I'm standing there like a 10-year-old going back to school. Okay, frightening, scary, shaking. But what do you do? What you do is you be honest. You begin to share this with somebody, a professional, whatever it is, a religious elder, doesn't matter to me, a pastor. My mom's third and ex-husband was a pastor. He's a great mentor for me. He helped me a lot during this process. Not help, just gave me jewels of wisdom to keep me balanced. And the coach was very empowering. I write about her in the book extensively because that was the transitioning time of my life.
In fact, each chapter tends to start with a note to the coach, right?
Right, exactly. And I want to share one very powerful thing. My other thing with a lot of, I believe you have to go deep when you surrender to transition into full power, to not regress and return to your addiction. Cellular redesigning means cellular biochemical renewing. Regeneration. See, all that running on the beach cleansed me, the toxins from deep within every cell, every pore of my bone. okay, deep, deep, deep within. And there's, I was talking the other day, you can just stop drinking and go to meetings, but what are you doing to the toxicity that's 20 years residing deep in your lungs, okay, from not breathing deep? Breath is the gift of life, the source of continual living. You must cleanse deep. The deeper you cleanse, the deeper your rebirthing process.
You write in the book about silent time, and the way you write about it makes me think that for long stretches of your life, you were really afraid to be alone with your thoughts.
Oh, yeah. That was a huge hurdle. That only happened actually in the last year and a half in Hawaii. You know, 5 years into my, so I don't like using sobriety, into my rebirth. Yeah.
Why don't you like using sobriety?
I just think it's a word that has no foundation. Okay, on the horse, off the horse, sobriety. It's not as if you were never not sober. You just weren't, you were.
You wanted to be more profound than just you're drinking or you're not.
Yeah, I just would rather say we're half dead and now we're rebirthed into truth, you know. And that means accepting what we've done, okay. And yeah, it was only till a year I got comfortable in my own skin. Because it takes work, like I say. But you give that 8 hours a day you used to drink or whatever every day into your new path, your rebirthing process, it changes you, transforms you, excuse me, changes below the waist. Transformation is the heart and soul above the waist.
Dean Scholl's book is called Digging Holes in My Soul. Dean Scholl will appear with his book and, I guess, do some readings tonight at Bloomsbury?
Yes.
At 7 o'clock at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland. And Dean Scholl, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Great, thank you.
It's good
My
to have
pleasure.
You. Yeah. Want to let our listeners know that we do have an event coming up which gives you a chance to meet with members of the JPR staff and the JPR Foundation Board. It is in concurrence with the JPR Foundation Board meeting in Eureka. It's a public reception tomorrow night, September 20th at 7 o'clock at the Eureka Theater in Eureka. We hope you can join us then. And if you'd like to get more information about that, you can call our front desk at 541-552-6301. That'll do it for today's exchange. You can find out more about the program and subjects and suggest a guest at jeffexchange.org. We also provide show topics and recordings and some other stuff on our Facebook page. Same links available on Twitter. Tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about support for patients of Parkinson's disease through the Parkinson's Foundation in Oregon. We'll talk about a developing play, a play on mental illness, written by a couple of Rogue Valley residents trying to get help to get their play on stage through Kickstarter. And then we'll talk to Jade Bijou, about her book, Attitude Reconstruction. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio. Our producer is Charlotte Durant. Reed Newland is our student assistant. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.